You're watching the College Football Playback, all in the Sports Objective. If you're tuned in via our Facebook page or our YouTube channel, let us hear from you with your thoughts and comments as we take a look back at the week that was around college football. Now, here are the guys.
Welcome in to week four of the College Football Playback right here on the Sports Objective. With me right now, my brother from a different mother, Kyle Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, David, the Richmond?
It's brunch for all of those right now, people just waking up. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
Not much. I'm monitoring my kids while they stepped outside for a moment to feed the cat. But yeah, that's...
DeWanye, right?
Yeah, as you can tell, the slamming of doors, and it's a... interesting time right now, which is why I'm off camera.
It's okay, Bubba. It's all right. It's life, baby. Your cat, okay. DeWanye, named after a pirate. His cat is named after DeWanye William Sutton.
Yeah, well, that's partially correct. Minus the last name. So a couple years ago when we played in Chapel Hill, a series which the Pirates took from the Tar Heels. So Riley was with me for games two and three of that series, and he was just he thought that name DeWanye was a cool name, a funny name. So he said, one day when we get a dog, we'll name it DeWanye. So we got a cat before a dog, and there was no doubt what he was going to name it. And interesting story there for our listeners, I'm sure.
I think you'd be surprised how many people are laughing at that, actually. I thought it was interesting. And if I think it's interesting, other people think it's interesting. Why don't Kevin Dog get both?
And just kind of our living situation, we didn't want to invest in a fence. We don't want a house dog. So
why not? House dogs are awesome.
Ooh, ooh. Yeah, that's all barking.
With the size of our house, it would not just not a preferred situation.
All right. Whatever.
Yeah, in the future, you can get a dog. Right?
Okay. And folks, you're listening to the Animal Objective.
chit-chat, Bubba. It's called chit-chat. That's what we call it.
Hey, I want to give a shout-out to Nikki. That's Kyle's dog.
Yeah, Nikki, that's one of my two dogs. Yeah, Nikki, she knows Bubba. She's never met you, Dave, oddly enough, but she does know Bubba.
She loved me.
Absolutely.
And I have Princess the cat. So it's a white cat. She's awesome. So for people that want to know about her animals.
I also have a Chihuahua named Honey. I got Nikki. She's a lab German Shepherd mix. And then I have my Chihuahua Honey.
I didn't know the name of I knew you had a Chihuahua.
Well, that Chihuahua's an old bitch. I mean, she's old grumpy ass, always, you know, 14 years old now. She's old grumpy. She's my wife's dog.
Nikki's actually made a cameos on the podcast over the last 2.5 years, so we know who Nikki is.
She likes to bark every now and then.
Yeah, so she gives her she's objective. She gives her approval to the show. So to her daddy. So anyway, guys, what did you think about? We'll get your thoughts on week number four. Hey, I was just thinking right before we started the show. Aren't you glad that we are in week four? I mean, that we've made it this far so far.
Yeah, week four for college football. Yeah, I mean, in terms of playing this many games, like, you know, and I think we're going to get the whole season in. It's just going to be every week. It's going to be a lot of games canceled. I think all the conference championship games are going to have to be pushed back to the 19th or later. And I think, you know, a lot of leagues have already done that. I don't know what's holding up some of the other leagues. Looks at the American. But I think everybody needs to push it back to at least the 19th because of all these cancellations. I'm just glad we have college football. Yesterday, the SEC started, as we'll talk about in depth here in a minute. And, it looks like everybody's going to play football before the season's over in some capacity, via anywhere from a 6 to 8 game schedule with the late starting conferences. And you're right. Week four is in the books and glad to have it. Hey, look,
here's Bubba. Hey, Bubba, what's up?
Just the main things that stood out for me, just the two top six teams falling, as we'll get to with Oklahoma losing again to Kansas State, and this time in Norman. And last year they were able to say it again.
That was reverb.
Last year they were able to overcome that that loss in Manhattan, we'll see how they do this year. They were picked off three times yesterday. Spencer Rattler threw for nearly 400 yards and four touchdowns, but he was intercepted those three times. And then they also lost a fumble. I didn't get to see much of that game, but I'm sure that was definitely a factor in them being unable to hold the three touchdown lead. And then how about Mike Leach going into Tiger Stadium, when you normally hear where opponents' dreams come to die, opponents' dreams came true yesterday.
Yeah, Tiger Stadium not nearly as intimidating when it's not full. But still, I don't care how many guys left the graduation, how many guys opted out to go beat the defending national champions. And, of course, they lost their coordinators, but you still go beat the defending national champions in Death Valley at Tiger Stadium. That's impressive. Hell of a debut for Mike Leach. And knowing how Alabama struggles against those kind of offenses,
Yep. That's
very interesting. Knowing Mike Leach ball clubs through the years, Washington State and Texas Tech, they might beat LSU, Alabama, and then lose to Ole Miss.
yeah, exactly.
That's just how they are, but. He's got more talent than he's ever had, I would think. I mean, Texas Tech, I know, had some good players towards the end of his tenure on all sides of the ball, but he's got to have as talented of a football team in terms of both sides of the ball, defense, et cetera, as he's ever had, just stepping into that situation in Starkville. I wouldn't think there would need to be a talent upgrade. I could be wrong, but I wouldn't think so. It was a heck of a win for the Bulldogs.
Hey, guys, I saw a stat. The one that I've heard the most is the last time a defending champion lost their home opener was 1978 Notre Dame. So you have to go all the way back to 78. I was in kindergarten.
Yeah, I can believe that. I mean, when you think about it, typically the defending national champion is good again the next year. And certainly you typically in your home opener, lots of times you're not playing a very good opponent. So, heck of a job by the Bulldogs. Did not expect it at all. I was kind of expecting it to take a while for Leach to get his offense rolling at the level that he would need to have it rolling at to beat an LSU. And it surprised me to see it out of the gates.
Guys, I know that they lost, like you said, Kyle, the offensive coordinator, but they've gone back to me, it's back to reality for LSU because they always seem to have a good defense and they really struggle with offense, and losing Joe Burrow to obviously the NFL and losing an offensive coordinator is a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, and they put up 30 something yesterday. What was the final score?
44-34.
Yeah. So not a terrible day on offense, but giving up 44 points to LSU, I don't care if it's what offense is against, that's something that they're not used to at all.
Yeah, since we've already discussed this game so much, we'll go ahead and get into these numbers as well. Out of 632 total yards for Mississippi State, 623 passing, and then some other things that were kind
that
of
the air raid, baby.
Some of those things that were kind of overshadowed, not on some fans, but. You know, you throw for over 600 yards against LSU, and that's going to probably take the headlines. But you had Miles Brennan, the first-time quarterback, first-time starter for LSU. He was sacked, I think, seven times by Mississippi State. And this, of course, impacted that total rushing. But it was, I think, 80 yards on the ground for the Tigers.
When are they going to change that stat? The sack should not take away from total rushing yards. That is the stupidest thing.
Yeah, that's one thing. I'm certainly a college football guy, not so much an NFL fan, but that's one thing the NFL does do correctly, and that's sacks not taking away from the team rushing stats.
It's retarded. It doesn't. Well, I shouldn't use that word anymore. But
take away from the passing numbers.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Wow, that's really that. I never knew about that. About that stat. That's really dumb when they do that.
You didn't know that, Dave? It's idiotic.
That is really stupid. I mean, that's on the quarterback. That's not on the running back.
Quarterback or the offensive line. But well, yeah. I'm just saying. Probably not on the running back.
Right. That's my point.
That's why at one point yesterday, Holt Naylor's had about 85 yards rushing, and then you looked a little bit later, and he was down to 40 yards rushing.
Yeah. Makes no sense.
But kind of moving on, let's start off with the American close to home. You'll see the American scores scrolling across the bottom of the screen there. And when we touched on the East Carolina game a lot last night with the Pirate Football Playback, check that out if you've not already done so. Pirate Nation, or anyone who's interested in just the American in general. But UCF took down the Pirates 51-28 in Greenville. Another game yesterday involving top 25 teams from the American was up at Nippert Stadium. You had Cincinnati taking on Army. 24-10, the Bearcats were victorious. Did you get to watch any of that one, Kyle?
A little bit. I didn't watch a lot after our game. I tried to, but I had to make a run to Kinston and didn't, you know, I was kind of just back and forth doing things after that game. But I did get to see some of it. Cincinnati looked good on defense. I think they kind of kept conservative on offense. It kind of went how I thought it would. I thought they would cover, but I didn't think they would blow it out. And it kind of went exactly how I thought. 14-point win for the Bearcats. Quality win. Army's a pretty good football team. And nice win for the Bearcats yesterday at Nippert. And, yeah, like I said, since I didn't watch it too much, I can't really analyze it, but it's certainly a quality win for the Bearcats and for the conference.
You know, we had caught up with Chad Brindle from the Bearcat Journal on Friday night on the Inside Slant, and he was talking about when we asked him how he thought that quality Cincinnati defense would hold up against Army's option attack, albeit a little bit different from Navy. He was pretty confident because they had fared well on defending Navy's flex bone attack, and they definitely did well yesterday. Army's touchdown was on a fumble return, so the Black Knights did not have an offensive touchdown.
Wow.
They had 182 yards rushing. They forced them to commit a couple of turnovers, and they were able to put it away late when Desmond Ritter hooked up with Doak for a 60-yard play. It was a little bit surprising that Cincinnati was only able to rush for 69 yards in the game.
Yeah, and Chad Brindle also alluded to that. He said that everybody wants to talk about Cincinnati's defense against Army's offense, and his concern was Army's defense against Cincinnati's offense. He thought Army's defense was really good, and he was right that that was Army's strength in the game, kind of shutting down Cincinnati. And since he did a better job of shutting down Army, but it wasn't until late in the game that since he was ever truly to put it away. So nice job, though. Anytime you can shut down that option offense completely the way Cincinnati did, that's impressive. And you know, they played it kind of close to the vest on offense, and you know, only had, was that the one turnover they had, or did they have any other turnovers, Bubba?
I'm not sure on that.
Okay. But anyway, nice job by Cincy.
And next up for Cincinnati, we'll see if they rise in the polls at all. You would imagine they probably would. But next up is USF, which is trying to find itself under a new coach. So Cincinnati's probably going to be remaining undefeated as the Bulls will come to Nippert Stadium next week.
Yeah, and I believe, Bubba, I could be wrong on this. You need to double check. I believe this week the Big Ten schools can start to be ranked in the top 25. I believe that's right. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects teams like Cincinnati.
Moving on in the American, Tulane took care of business as we, or at least you and I, Kyle, thought they would in Hattiesburg at the Rock. It wasn't easy early on. Southern Miss jumped out to a 14-7 lead after the first quarter, but from that point on, it was all Green Wave, and they absolutely rolled, pun intended, the Golden Eagles 66-24.
Yeah, I believe it was it tied at halftime? If not, it was pretty close. And all too late in the second half. Southern Miss has got huge problems on defense, particularly with their run defense. And Tulane just ran it down their throats. Over 400 yards rushing, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct. 722 total yards and 430 rushing yards. 7 rushing touchdowns for Willie Fritz Ball Club.
Yeah, I believe the interim head coach, he just blew any opportunity he had to get that job permanently. Unless there's a major turnaround the second half of the year. But that's a bad performance right there.
And leading the way for the Green Wave on the ground was Cameron Carroll. He had 15 carries for 163 yards, 3 touchdowns. So all Green Wave in that one as their roller coaster start to the season continues. They rallied in game one, then they lost a 24-point lead in game two against Navy. And yesterday they steamrolled through Southern Miss. Last game to talk about this week in the American with so many teams facing either postponements or cancellations due to COVID. You had SMU steamrolling through Stephen F. Austin taking down the Lumberjacks 50-7.
Good job, SMU.
And like you, that was one that I was not able to see any of, but I did glance at the box score this morning in preparation for this broadcast, and Bentley and McDaniel for SMU both topped 100 yards on the ground, and I don't recall exactly what it was, but it doesn't seem like Shane Bouchel threw for nearly the yardage you would expect when you see a 50-7 victory. It was more the ground attack for the Ponies.
I probably saw an opportunity to maybe get the ground game going and test out some of their running game against Stone Cold Stephen F. Austin. Obviously, you won't be able to do that against better opponents. So, not the Stephen F. They're a decent FCS program, but yeah, nice job steamrolling them by the Ponies.
Moving on to the ACC, a game taking place, I guess 2.5 hours up the road or so from me, was Virginia Tech hosting NC State. The Hokies playing its opener, or their opener, I should say. And NC State had looked pretty good, at least offensively, in game one, taking down Wake Forest. But yesterday, a lot was made of the Hokies having 23 guys out. A couple of those guys were starters on quarterback Hendon Hooker and also one of the starting cornerbacks for Virginia Tech. And then I do think at least probably 5 or 6, if not more, were on the 2 deep. So I don't want to underestimate it, but maybe not quite as impactful as some people had initially thought. But nonetheless, the Hokies get a big 45-24 win over Dave Dorn and the Wolfpack, and really encouraging for Virginia Tech fans, I'm sure, after the way they struggled for a lot of last season at times.
Yeah, you're without your quarterback. You think he'll be their starting quarterback anymore, Bubba? And then 6 guys off the 2 deep. I don't care if you start or not. If you're on the 2 deep, you're going to see significant playing time. That's an impressive victory. I think all of us had taken NC State in the upset, and Virginia Tech steamrolled them. Nice job of the Hokies. Everybody wants to talk about Miami and Notre Dame and North Carolina being the challengers for Clemson. I'd be interested to see how the season's going to play out for Virginia Tech after that performance yesterday.
Definitely. And one of the things that allowed them to overcome quarterback Hendon Hooker being out was their ground attack. They ran for 314 yards and averaged right at 7.5 yards per attempt. And Kansas transfer Khalil Herbert had 6 for 104.
Nice. Kansas can get some running backs. I don't know why they can't do anything with them or seem to win, but when you think about the talent Kansas has at running back the last couple of years, and then they had a kid transfer out of Kansas that put up that kind of numbers yesterday on NC State, that's impressive.
Moving on in the ACC and down in Florida, and you had the rivalry. most people weren't expecting this game to be close, and it was probably less competitive than what most people would have thought. And, you know, you had De'Aaron King and Miami just absolutely lighting up Florida State in a game that finished 52-10.
Yeah, I think Miami is really good, and I think Florida State's really bad. The Canes are probably, at least early on, look to be the best they've been in many, many years. Who knows if that's going to play out, but it looks that way. Florida State, I've never seen a Florida State team this bad. They're terrible. They are potentially, who knows how the season's going to play out, Bubba, but being there playing nothing but a conference slate, they had one non-conference game. They may go, what is their one non-conference game? Jacksonville State. They may go 1-10.
In that game, De'Aaron King continues to come along in the passing game. 29 of 40, 267 yards, two touchdowns, did not throw an interception. And he also ran, which we know he does so well, for 65 yards.
Yeah, a hell of an athlete, obviously. He was always good at Houston. I think Rhett Lashley is getting more out of him than they ever got out of him at Houston in terms of the passing game. But he's a hell of an athlete and a great quarterback. And, you know, I hate to see him leaving Houston, but in terms of his career, I don't know that Dana Holgorsen's air raid was the right offense for him. What he's doing in Miami right now is special.
Louisville's looking to bounce back from a loss to Miami last week at Cardinal Stadium, and they were in Pittsburgh yesterday. Pitt won a thriller 23-20 in a game in which that Panthers defense under Pat Narduzzi and staff limited Louisville, who has shown to have a very explosive offense under Scott Satterfield, to just something like 225 total yards, and I think 75 of those came on one play.
Bubba, I'm not picking Louisville to win any more games this year. I'm done. they bit me 2 weeks in a row. I had a chance yesterday to beat Pitt on the road, but didn't. But a nice job by Pitt. If they had a little bit better offense, they could challenge in the ACC. Their defense is really good. Nice job by Louisville to get the win, and or by Pitt, I'm sorry, to get the win. And they're really good on defense. Like I said, if they had a little bit better offense, they could be special, but they'll get their share of wins this year, and certainly are one of the best five or six teams in the ACC.
Going back down to the state of Virginia, you had Duke, who had already played two games. They were entering Charlottesville looking for their first win. It did not happen, and it's not going to happen when you turn the ball over seven times.
Yeah, I'm surprised it was actually as competitive as it was with all those turnovers. So nice job by the Hoos to beat Duke and start off 1-0. And I did not watch any of that game, Bubba, so I really don't have anything to say about it except Duke's 0-3 and Virginia's 1-0.
And let me correct myself. You can win with seven turnovers because we saw East Carolina do it when we beat UAB in 2011. So yeah. Not 99.99% of the time you're not going to win with seven turnovers.
If you're playing a really bad UAB team, you can barely do it.
But a little more about this game. Of those seven turnovers, and Chase Bryce, the Clemson transfer quarterback, threw four picks. And that was, of course, Virginia's first ball game. And so I said on the Inside Slant, I'd certainly taken UVA in this matchup, and really a big fan of what Bronco Mendenhall is building there in Charlottesville. And very much like you did out in Provo, and they were just solid year in, year out. And I think Virginia is on its way to being just that.
Yeah, a good football team. The ACC is as good this year as it's been in a long time, I think. It's hard to say for sure with very limited non-conference play, but it looks that way.
I talked about an 0-2 Duke team unable to get its first win. You had Syracuse, which was in the same boat. They were playing their first home game, welcoming in Georgia Tech at the Carrier Dome, and they were able to get it done, moving to 1-2, taking down the Yellow Jackets 37-20.
I knew I should have took Syracuse. I said Friday night I should take Syracuse. We talked about the line take being an 8-point favorite, how that didn't look right. And boy, that wasn't right. Yellow Jackets get swatted. Nice win by Syracuse. I don't think Syracuse is really bad. They had been competitive in their first two games. Last year there was high expectations for the Orange and they were terrible. This year, low expectations and they may be decent. So maybe they just don't do well with expectations. Ever seen a team like that, Bubba?
Yeah. For Georgia Tech, it was simply a matter of turnovers and penalties. We talked about Duke turning over 7 times in its loss yesterday. And Georgia Tech turned it over 5 and also committed 15 penalties.
Yeah. Sounds familiar. Georgia Tech beat, you know, Florida State week one. That might not mean much now.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Last game from the ACC that we have not touched on, Boston College and Texas State. I think you were actually able to watch some of this game, right, Kyle?
That game, Bubba, is hidden. It's one of those ACC games. Like, I believe Duke's game last week was like that. That if you have Dish Network, you cannot find the damn game. I don't know. I think ACC still has a regional deal where games are syndicated throughout Fox Sports Nets affiliates. And whatever reason, I can't find it on Dish Network this week or the Duke game last week, but I was able to listen to it. When I saw the game was close in the fourth quarter, me loving upsets and thinking Texas State was going to pull it out, I went on to tune in and I pulled up the Boston College radio network. And unfortunately, Texas State blew the lead. They were leading by 7 with about 5 minutes to go. Boston College comes down, ties the ball game, then stops Texas State with a 3-and-out, goes down, kicks field goal, wins the football game. They gave up 10 points in the last 4 minutes or so of the game and end up blowing the lead and losing to Boston College. And Texas State, man, they are so close right now to being 4-0. Instead, they're 1-4 or 1-3.
Yeah, that's what I was going to chime in with. And the Texas State's 1-3, all three of those losses against SMU, UTSA, and yesterday BC have been either could wins or even should wins. I know UTSA was definitely in that should win category where their special teams woes, specifically the kicking game, came back to bite them. But Jake Spavadal certainly seems to have the Bobcats trending up, and we'll continue to keep an eye on them to see if they can get over that hump and start to win some games as they move into league play.
Yeah, the Sun Belt's not an easy league this year. And then going back to the UTSA game, they had a huge kick return with just a few seconds left to tie the game, PAT to win it, and they missed it.
But moving on to the Big 12, and we've already touched on what took place yesterday in Norman with number 3, Oklahoma, and Lincoln Riley and crew falling to the Wildcats and rallying from 35-14 down on, I guess, mid to late third quarter, scoring those 24 unanswered points to take down the Sooners once again. Number 8, Texas, nearly fell. They were able to rally from 15 down in Lubbock in an absolute shootout, winning 63-56 in overtime.
Yeah, I did not get to see any of that one either. I was on the road. I wish I would have watched that game. I'm going to go back and probably actually watch that on YouTube to see what exactly played out in the second half and in overtime. But that is classic Big 12 football right there when you're scoring those numbers. Texas Tech always seems to have a great offense no matter who the coach is. Unfortunately, could not hold on to beat Texas, and the Longhorns come up with the victory. But hey, Texas Tech won that game. I mean, with Oklahoma losing, the Big 12 would have been completely out of whack. I don't think the Big 12, you know, this year, it is a mess, man. When you look at all those upsets against the Sun Belt, Oklahoma State almost going down to Tulsa, and now in conference, the best team, Oklahoma, already losing. So Kansas State team that lost to Arkansas State, you know, to me, the Big 12 is kind of a crap show. Fun to watch, but I'm not sure they're a very good league this year.
Moving on within the state of Texas, and there in the Big 12, and you had TCU playing its first game, Iowa State and Brock Purdy coming to Fort Worth, and it's kind of a back and forth game. Iowa State did score first, but TCU was playing from behind for much of it. I say back and forth, and they were. And Iowa State had, like I said, gotten that first score of the ball game, but pretty entertaining game. And just by glancing at the box score, I would have imagined it would have been entertaining. But Brock Purdy was much more consistent than he was against Louisiana. He was 18 out of 23 for over 200 yards, and then Breece Hall rushed for 3 touchdowns and more than 150 for the Cyclones.
Yeah, it's tough to watch when you have an East Carolina game actually on, and then it goes from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., and then you got other things you got to do. It's hard to sit and watch games as well as closely as we have with earlier this year, where we watched every single game on Saturday. But didn't get to see any of this one either. But nice win by Iowa State. Anytime you can go beat Gary Patterson and TCU in Fort Worth is a good win, particularly after they started the season with the loss to Louisiana. So not nice win by the Cyclones to beat the Horned Frogs, and one I actually got right in our picks.
And guess who the Cyclones have up next? They are welcoming Oklahoma to Jack Trice Stadium in Ames. So next weekend, we'll see how Lincoln Riley and company are able to go on the road and whether they can bounce back.
I bet they can. That's an interesting game for Iowa State and Oklahoma. Both of them need to win that. And Big 12 wide open right now in terms of who's going to be 1-2.
Week 1, Oklahoma State, they were able to pull out a win against Tulsa, but that was about it. Really had issues offensively. Yesterday they were welcoming West Virginia and to Stillwater, and in that one, again, a game that I didn't get to see any of, but the Cowboys won by 2 touchdowns, and Illingworth, the quarterback who had come in late third quarter in Tulsa in game 1 and really provided a spark. He was solid. His numbers weren't anything that are going to, you know, still any headlines, but he was 15 out of 21 for 140 yards. So he was efficient, but then Chuba Hubbard, he had 100 plus on the ground. So that was one that we had actually, I'd taken West Virginia an upset after Oklahoma State had struggled. But I am certainly not surprised that Oklahoma State was victorious.
I thought Oklahoma State's playing pretty good defense for 2 straight weeks. People talking about their offense struggling, but, they held Tulsa to what, 7? And how many points did they hold West Virginia to?
13, and I think maybe less than 70 yards rushing.
Yeah, so that's something to keep an eye on. Lots of times when you have a league wide open and you talk about high-powered offenses, could the team playing good defense sneak up in there and finish 1 or 2 and be in that Big 12 championship game?
And rounding out things in the Big 12, you had – down in Waco, Dave Aranda getting his initial win in the season opener for the Bears. It was back and forth a little bit early, but then from second quarter on, it was all Baylor, 47-14 over Les Miles and the Jayhawks.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch Baylor this year. I did get to see some of that one late on ESPNU. It'll be interesting to watch Baylor this year. Larry Fedora is the OC there, and you know how I keep up with Southern Miss a lot. That's, you know, who I'd like to see them bring back. I'd love to see Fedora back at USM. I think they need that right now for their fans, a familiar name with some history to get that fan base excited again because they're really down there. But anyway, nice win by Baylor, and it'll be interesting to watch their offense this year under Fedora as OC.
Moving to Conference USA, you had a couple of non-Saturday games, which is so often the case. NCUSA, you had UAB, Bill Clark, and the Blazers routed the Jaguars down in their new stadium, 42-10 UAB.
Yeah, I saw some of that on Thursday night. UAB looked good. I don't think South Alabama is very good at all. I think their win over USM might not mean much now. It'll mean a lot to them in terms of bragging rights, but Southern Miss doesn't look very good. Not nice win by UAB to get the in-state Vic in dominating fashion over the Jaguars.
And UAB, it was nice for them to bounce back after that loss at Miami. And
hey, that don't look so bad now, that performance against Miami, Bubba. That looks pretty dang good, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And not surprised whatsoever. You expect Bill Clark's teams to be solid, and they were that. On Friday night, the Roadrunners, UTSA, in a game that was
scheduled. 3-0 Roadrunners, Bubba. The 3-0 Roadrunners.
Yeah. The 3-0 Roadrunners after a 37-35 victory over the Blue Raiders at the Alamo Dome.
Worst 3-0 team in college football. I guarantee you that. I watched a lot of that game. That was a fun game to watch, back and forth in the second half. Middle Tennessee finally showing some signs of life on offense because they had struggled mightily early. UTSA puts it away late, holds on for the Vic, and they are 3-0. 3-0, I guess, is 3-0, but I don't think they're going to – it'll be interesting to see how their season plays out because they're not a very good football team even to be 3-0. And they got a good offense, but their defense is terrible.
Yeah. Asher O'Hara, kind of to your point, for Middle Tennessee, threw for 372 yards and three touchdowns for the Blue Raiders, 31 out of 47. And he did throw two interceptions. So,
yeah. And the Middle had not scored on anybody up to that point. But still a nice win, man. UTSA 3-0. I'm not trying to take that away from them. I believe that's first-year head coach down there in San Antonio.
It is, and it's a guy who very successful high school coach in the state of Texas, and then he had moved on, and he was kind of a Chad Morris disciple, if you will, because he actually spent a year or two at Texas, but after that he was with Chad Morris at SMU and then Arkansas.
Yeah, and Chad Morris made a mistake going to Arkansas. Not a good career move. That was hate. They were going to have to give him more time than they did if he was going to totally different direction from Brett Bielema. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, nice win for the Roadrunners.
Week one, the Liberty Flames had gone on the road and found a way to win a thriller at Western Kentucky. Hugh Freeze's ball club playing his first home game of the year. Welcome in Butch Davis and the FIU Panthers to town, and they were victorious. The Flames were 36-34 at Williams Stadium in Lynchburg.
Yeah, heck of a job Hugh Freeze is doing at Liberty. And 2-0, Liberty would be in Conference USA if they were in the league. But nice job, man, to get the win over Butch Davis and FIU. I can't say anything more about Hugh Freeze as a coach. You wonder with the background he had, with the trouble he got into at Ole Miss, both on the field and off the field, particularly the off the field is what cost him the job. And Bubba, of all places, Liberty gives him an opportunity. I guess forgive, huh? But I'd be interested to see if he gets another P5 opportunity or a higher level group of five job like in the American. But I can tell you this, if Liberty wants to, they can pay him as much as anybody. They got a lot of independent money. That's not from a conference or, from the school. They're independently wealthy, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So it'll be interesting to see how long he stays in Lynchburg, how many other opportunities come around for Hugh Freeze. But he's a heck of a football coach.
And with him being an alum, if I'm Southern Miss, I at least
You give him a call.
You at least make the call with him being an alum.
Liberty could pay him more than Southern Miss, but Does he want to get back in Mississippi? Southern Miss is his alma mater. I mean, you know, I do think there's a handful of USM fans that would probably shudder at the fact of hiring a former Ole Miss head coach, but you better get over that nonsense. He's a heck of a football coach, and if Mike Houston were to leave tomorrow, he'd probably be the first phone call I'd want us to make.
No doubt. He's definitely a heck of a football coach. He's had success everywhere he's been. For the Flames yesterday, Malik Willis, their quarterback, had a heck of a day, completing 80% of his passes for nearly 300 yards. And then you also had Josh Mack, top 100 on the ground for the Flames. You talk about UTSA and how you're not very impressed with them, even though they're 3-0. How about UTEP? And they are 3-1 now after
everything I said about UTSA. They're 3-1. Okay, I know they beat an FCS, and I know they beat Monroe. Who else did they beat?
They beat a couple of FCS opponents. I think one of those was maybe Stephen F. Austin, and I'm trying to recall the other. Okay. Yeah, they their other two victories were Stephen F. Austin 24-14 in the opener, and then they had beaten Abilene Christian 17-13.
Before the Mountain West announced they were coming back, somebody had us playing UTEP in the New Mexico Bowl. I'd bring them on, baby. 3-1, my ass. I mean, I'm telling you what. UTSA, I think, would murder UTEP. That's how bad I think UTEP is. You talk about scheduling playing to your advantage. When I saw they shut out Monroe yesterday, I said, Monroe's the worst team in the history of college football. But hats off, hey, look. Steve Logan's old friend, Dana Demmel, is at UTEP. So good for Dana. 3-1 start for the Miners.
Hey, now, Kyle, don't sell the Warhawks short. They didn't get shut out. They were able to muster 6 points. It was 31-6.
Okay. When I saw the score was 24-0, I thought that was a final.
Hey, but this game, and I think you may have just said this, so I apologize if I'm repeating myself, but the game was played in Monroe as well, and it wasn't at the Sun Bowl.
No, I didn't say that, but that's a nice job by UTEP going on the road. They're going to be excited in El Paso, man. First time they've had anything to be excited about down there in years. Who do the Miners have next?
The Miners have the team that we're about to talk about, who was victorious yesterday, Skip Holtz and the La Tech Bulldogs. Louisiana Tech is next up for Dana Demmel and the UTEP Miners.
I bet you they won't be. I bet you they won't be 4-1. But
and that game is in Ruston.
Yeah, they won't be 4-1. Reality's about to sink in for UTEP. I have a feeling, though. You know, who knows, man? La Tech's not a world beater this year. But what did the Bulldogs do yesterday? I didn't even see that score.
Yeah, speaking of what took place in Ruston yesterday, you had La Tech taking down Houston Baptist 66-38. Houston Baptist was on the brink of the huge upset in Lubbock, and we talked about that explosive offense and that they have with Bailey Zappe, the quarterback. And he threw for 5 touchdowns and over 400 yards yesterday. But it was nowhere near enough, as La Tech gave up 38 and still won by 4 touchdowns. For Louisiana Tech, their quarterback, Luke Anthony, also threw 5 touchdown passes.
Yeah, their offenses look pretty good this year over Southern Miss and now over Houston Baptist. Nice job by La Tech. That's Joe Sloan. It's the OC there now, former Pirate. Keep an eye on the Bulldogs and their offense.
And just a little tidbit, as far as it's interesting to glance at the attendance, especially considering we can only have 350. When I say we, I'm talking about Eddie East Carolina. For our listeners who, if you're a first time listener and you don't realize this is an East Carolina centric podcast, but 350 is all we could have yesterday at Dowdy Ficklin. Down in Ruston, they were able to have a little over 7,000.
So they had their normal crowd.
Moving on, taking a look at the independents. We've already talked about a couple of the games. The only ones that we have not discussed was BYU. BYU had some games that were, at least one game that was postponed because of COVID. I'm trying to remember who that game was against. And you can help me out there, Kyle. They had won 55-3 at Navy. They were supposed to play that very next week up in West Point, but were unable to do so. Yesterday, they finally play again in Provo, taking on Troy, who was a big winner week one against week one for them against Middle Tennessee in their opener in Murfreesboro. But yesterday, last night, it was all Cougars, 48-7.
Yeah, they're good. It's a shame that they don't have a more national schedule than they normally do this year. I think the Cougs may go undefeated, particularly now that Army is off their schedule. They have an 8-game schedule. I don't know if they're going to add anybody else, if they're going to try to reschedule that Army game. But I believe the Cougs have a really good shot at going undefeated. They have the Houston Cougars still to come. I don't know what else off the top of my head. It seems like they maybe play UTSA.
Yeah, since you bring it up, and you're correct, they do play UTSA in Provo. They go to Houston. Next up, they have Louisiana Tech on October 2nd. It says, but something's not. It must be that La Tech UTEP game. That must be the following week. I didn't notice the date on that.
They are playing them. That the game was just scheduled about 2 weeks ago.
Right. Yeah, and I do remember, like you're saying, I didn't recall the date, but I remember that game being scheduled within the last week or two.
That's an interesting game. Louisiana Tech has a good offense. I don't think they're going to be good enough to beat BYU, but that is an interesting game.
And it is in Provo on ESPN2 on 9:00 on Friday night. So
that'd be fun to watch.
Indeed, and for BYU, it was the ground attack primarily in the opener against Navy. Last night, it was the arm of Josh Wilson, that doesn't sound right. I think it's Zach something. I think my app's wrong, but anyway, BYU threw for nearly 400 yards in that ball game.
Yeah, nice one by BYU. Watched some of that game. Very dominant performance over Troy. Troy's not a bad team. Impressive win by BYU. And will they go undefeated this year? That is the question, really, to me. Would they have a favorable schedule? And like their OC. A couple years ago, I really thought that their head coach, cannot think of his name right now, I thought he was going to be fired back when we beat him. When Montgomery was here, I thought that guy wouldn't be there long, but he's kind of righted the ship, made some changes on his staff, which was very important. I got a good OC there now, and maybe looking at an undefeated season right in the S. And hey, look, people can put an asterisk beside it or whatever, but during this pandemic with the schedule they had to put together last minute, if they go undefeated, hats off to them.
Yeah, and to this point, they've been dominant, winning 55-3 and 48-7. And that's the thing for me. Yes, and they're not playing some of those bigger names that, at least to this point, and then really throughout the schedule, as we just discussed a little bit. But I certainly wish they would have been able to play a lot of those Pac-12 and Big Ten opponents, because I think they would have had their success and not necessarily running through it unbeaten, but they would have opened some eyes. And Kalani Sitake, after it seemed like, at least to the outsiders, that it was semi-shaky ground a couple years ago, that program. Yeah, and I say that based on what I had heard from some, Garrett McClintock, who we've had on the program, because he didn't seem like he was on the verge of being fired, but yes, there was plenty of proving that needed to be done, and they are definitely doing just that. Two more leagues to discuss that we have not touched on a whole lot yet, Sun Belt and SEC. We'll go with the Sun Belt first. in the Sun Belt yesterday, just stealing the show in terms of that league's results, was down in Louisiana in Lafayette. You had the Raging Cajuns winning an absolute thriller against Georgia Southern 20-18 on a 53-yard field goal as time expired.
Yeah, I flipped, but I think it was 17-18 with under a minute to go, and Louisiana had the ball, and we were been blown out at that point. I flipped it over to watch the end of that game, watch the last minute of it. Louisiana drives down the field, stalls, and a fourth down. Their kicker had struggled all year. They actually didn't know if they were going to go for it or kick the 50-some-yard field goal the way their kicker had struggled. And they line up to kick the 50, it was 53-yarder or something like that, and right through the uprights, baby. And you could see the player. I don't think there was a player on that team that thought he was going to make that kick. That was one of the greatest reactions I've ever seen. It was fantastic. And Louisiana's 3-0. They have struggled after beating Kansas State against Georgia Southern and against Georgia State, but they found a way to win both of them. They keep finding ways to win, and that was as fun of an ending to watch. Just because, like I said, I don't think anybody in that stadium thought that kid was going to make that kick.
And talking about Louisiana getting it done. Next up for the Raging Cajuns, they're going to try to get the monkey off their back as they will go to Boone, North Carolina, to take on App State and the Mountaineers. They haven't had any success, and like I just referenced, against that program. But could this year be the year? We shall see. But talking about App State, and they got a bounce back win over Campbell, had something like, 30, 35 guys, something crazy out, even more than Georgia Southern had when they nearly got upset by the Camels. And it looked like that might take place again. 17-13, App was leading at halftime, but it was all Mountaineers. They really got their rushing attack going after the break and won 52-21 over the Campbell Camels.
Yeah, I knew with all those players out, I was keeping up with that score early. And then at halftime, the Mountaineers were barely leading. And I thought, oh, Lord, here we go. I was like, I don't care how many players are out. If Campbell wins this game, Appalachian State's going everybody fired. But they put them away in the second half. So good performance by App with all those players out due to COVID in the second half to beat the Camels. And now it's on to Lafayette. I think that's on a Wednesday night, not this Wednesday, but the following Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday, October 7th, and that is – as you would guess, an ESPN telecast, and that one is 7:30 on Wednesday, October 7th. Like I said, on the ESPN, and I talked about the Mountaineers getting their ground game going. They ran for over 400 yards and 5 touchdowns in the second half.
Yeah, big game for the Mountaineers and the Raging Cajun coming up here in a little over a week. Be a fun one to watch.
For the most part, I think that's we've touched on everything in the Sun Belt. Lastly, we saved the best league for last with the SEC. And what were some things that stood out? We've talked about LSU, Mississippi State. Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing. But several other games on the docket yesterday, you had number 4, Georgia, the Bulldogs going to take on one of its former coaches there at Arkansas. And it looked like the upset may happen. It was Arkansas winning that ball game. I think it was 10-5 in the third quarter. And Georgia got it rolling from that point on and actually went on to win 37-10. But if you didn't see how that game, the flow of it, you would have probably thought it was Georgia throughout. But that was not the case. The Bulldogs were trailing 10-5 mid third quarter.
Yeah, Arkansas came out playing good defense. Georgia took a while to get their offense going. Coach Munkin, their OC, former Southern Mississippi coach, got the offense going in the second half and put the Razorbacks away. And so good win for Georgia. The game yesterday in the SEC that I really watched the most of was Tennessee, South Carolina. Tennessee kind of came out and was kind of dominating the game, and South Carolina comes roaring back in the second half. And Mike Bobo, first year offensive coordinator down in Columbia, gets his offense going and comes back and ties Tennessee, and it's kind of a back and forth game. And the Vols win it late. South Carolina forces a punt with about a minute and 40 some seconds to go, and Tennessee punts it to them, and South Carolina muffs the punt. Tennessee recovers it and runs the clock out to preserve the victory down in Columbia. But that was a fun game to watch.
We talked about number six, LSU, going down. Number four, Georgia, getting it together in the second half. Number two, Alabama, took down Missouri in what was the first game for Eli Drinkwitz there in Columbia. It was all tied in the first half, 28-3, and then they cruised to a 38-19 win over the Tigers.
Yeah, they kind of took the foot off the gas, or either Missouri played better football in the second half, but Bama gets it done. Like I said, not as impressive in the second half. Again, I don't know if that was Alabama taking the foot off the gas or Missouri just playing better ball.
And Bubba Grant, we appreciate you tuning in as always and chiming in, saying that game down in Louisiana with the Raging Cajuns winning on the 53-yard field goal as time expired was certainly a thriller. Moving on within the SEC, Texas A&M, big things expected out of the Aggies this year. Maybe some people think they could potentially be a contender in the West. And I say West, I assume the SEC is sticking with divisional play. I believe they are, unlike the ACC. But Texas A&M 17-12 over Vanderbilt. The Aggies turned it over, I think, at least four times in that one.
Vandy playing good defense as always. They just can never get much going on the offensive side of the ball. Nice win for Texas A&M despite the struggles. I mean, I think most people thought A&M would win that by a much larger margin. But, look, they got the Vic, and you move on.
And that's funny, and that's an excellent point, what you bring up about Vanderbilt. When James Franklin was there, they found a way to generate some offense. But, yes, by and large, down through the years, it seems like and just to be fair, I also back when they had Jay Cutler at quarterback, not bad on offense then, but more often than not, it seems as though their defense is more solid than their offense there in Nashville. And that's kind of odd because most teams is the other way around, where you have a pretty good offense but can't stop anybody.
Yeah, particularly under their current head coach. Can't think of his name right now. He's been there a few years now. But yeah,
Coach Mason.
Yeah, they always play good defense and don't have very good offense. You would think maybe he'd get a good OC. Might make his job a little easier.
But speaking of plenty of offense, and Dan Mullen took his Gators to Oxford yesterday and just lit up Lane Kiffin in the debut for him with the Rebels, 51-35, Florida.
Yeah, nice win by Florida. Ole Miss played pretty good football offensively. I don't really think they should have anything to be too upset about. Kiffin, I think, will probably be all right there. Florida's really good, and Ole Miss did not get embarrassed in that game. So I actually was more competitive than I expected it to be, Bubba. So nice win for Florida. They look good, but I don't think Ole Miss did anything to embarrass themselves.
Yeah, I talk about Florida's offensive performance in that one. 642 total yards, a career high, 416 passing for Kyle Trask, tied an SEC and school record with six passing touchdowns.
Yeah, Reese certainly was not pleased with the Ole Miss defense. I can hear her in the background. But Florida put up those big numbers on offense against the Rebels, but the Rebels put up 35 points and look pretty good on offense themselves. When I talk about the Rebels not doing anything to embarrass themselves, I certainly meant on the offensive side of the ball.
Change my mind about the switch. I don't know if I want to.
We now have a family show, but
All right. It is what it is, Bob.
The Gators additionally ran for nearly 200 yards. So very interested to see. Maybe this is the year that Florida gets back on top on that east side of the conference. I really think that may be the case. Long way to go. And with the different schedules this year, I'm glancing very quickly to see when that matchup is occurring with Georgia. And it's actually November 7th. November 7th when the Bulldogs and Gators will meet.
Yeah, that'll be a fun matchup. And certainly should decide the East Division of the SEC, no doubt.
And last thing to mention, you had Auburn. Looked like Kentucky may do it yesterday in the first half. Certainly had their opportunities and really had their opportunities throughout. I knew they had a pick six that went for 100 yards. And Auburn won by, 29-13, something like that, yesterday on the Plains.
Yeah, nice win over Kentucky. A lot of people like Kentucky in the upset for whatever reason. And Auburn takes care of business and beats Kentucky convincingly for a very nice win for the Tigers.
Anything else? I think we've gone through week four pretty thoroughly. Anything else to add? Or have you taken a look at week five? What do you think, Kyle, about in the games next week?
I really haven't looked at it yet. I need to. We will do that this week. And look at some of the matchups for next week. Obviously, the one matchup I'm most focused on is East Carolina, Georgia State. Will the game be played? Coach Houston seemed pretty confident post-game yesterday that we would be playing the Panthers in Atlanta. Seems to think that Georgia State's COVID situation isn't as bad as initially thought. So hopefully he is correct, and the Pirates will be on their way to Atlanta GA. I'm also anxious to see what the spread will be in that game. Stay tuned.
We did mention that BYU-La Tech game. I know another one just right off the top of my head that I failed to mention when we were talking about SMU. They're playing Memphis, assuming that Memphis is able to play. But that should be a tremendous matchup between the Mustangs and Tigers.
Memphis should be good to go by this point. You can't stay out for so long.
yeah, you would hope so. And some others, kind of scrolling through things here. You also have Oklahoma and Iowa State. We did mention that one earlier with the Sooners looking to get back on track as they head to Ames. Texas, who survived yesterday in Lubbock, they are hosting TCU. That's not a bad one. Also, you have number two Alabama hosting number 10 Texas A&M. And I just mentioned as far as the Aggies and Jimbo Fisher being potential contenders, we'll find out next week.
Who's Mississippi State have?
Give me a moment. So Mississippi State has – we'll see if they can avoid a hangover as they will host Arkansas.
All right, yeah. They'll be 2-0.
Yeah, we'll be very interested to see – how things go for Mike Leach and the Bulldogs moving forward to see if yesterday was more of an exception or if KJ Costello and State will continue to light folks up. But if you don't have anything else, Kyle, we'll go ahead and wrap this episode of the College Football Playback up. And for Kyle Barber, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. You have been listening and watching the College Football Playback on the Sports Objective. Have a great week, everybody.